I am grateful to everybody who's here in this room. It's a gift to have an audience to speak to. And I'm grateful for everybody who tunes in on the internet, on our website. And I'm grateful to David for making us available to the world on our website. It's a true gift to us that you do, and thank you. So this is the week where we talk about the chapter in Anatomy of Healing Prayer by Ernest Holmes that we're studying that's called There's No Difference Between the Prayer and What It Does. And that's a challenging concept. And to be perfectly honest, I'm not going to speak to that part of it because I still am not quite clear what he meant by that. But he talked about a whole lot of other subjects that just totally turned me on in the chapter. He kind of bounced from one place to another and created a new vision for me about what it is we do when we pray. And I will be translating it into other words in various places, particularly current concepts from the Abraham Hicks teachings, because what he says is words that we don't necessarily use in our contemporary timing. He gave the talks that this book is based on in the 1950s, shortly before he died. So this book is the culmination of all of the years, like 40 years of teaching science of mind, and where he got to at the end of his life, whereas he started writing his books. His first book was published in 1919, and so these were from the late 50s. So things, he taught the same thing his whole life, and he taught it in different ways, that some of which speak to me powerfully. And so Chris sang her wonderful song, Imagineers, and the first piece of this chapter that I want to share with you is about imagination, and it directly relates to what David said in his introduction for himself today about stretching out from the inside out to be bigger in the world. And so this is the quote from Ernest Holmes from this chapter. I think there is a soul-touching and intellectual process that stretches the intellect through the imagination and feeling until it lets in more spiritual territory that then becomes part of the intellect. He said, I cannot conceive that we reach a place where chaos is and we don't have any intelligence. I don't think we push out into the universe to the loss of identity. I think we take in more territory. And more and more. So what I get from that is that the infinite eternal nature of us becomes more and more a part of the temporal aspect of us, so that we begin to express more of that infinite nature right where we are here and now. And we allow that to express through us. And so there were a number of other concepts that he addressed. And the next one I'm inspired in this moment to address is ease. That it doesn't have to be hard. In this book, Anatomy of Healing Prayer, it says, relax and let it happen. Our attempts to force too much defeat us. The more you strain, the harder it's going to be. There's a certain relaxation. You don't force anything. You don't coerce anything. You don't hold thoughts. You don't put anything in. You always take it out. Always. It's already in there. It's already in there. So how does it already get to be in there? What does that mean? And so he talked about the unconditional. And he called it, from Thomas Troard, the realm of unconditional causes. And I was really intrigued by that concept and that terminology. What is an unconditional cause? what does that even mean? And he quoted Troard, who said, "In such degree, in treatment," that's what we call prayer, "as we believe that our treatment is conditioned by the past, the present, or the future, we are not treating in what we might call the realm of the absolute or the realm of unconditioned causes. Our treatment and what it's going to do depends on where we condition it." And then he went on to say, "And where we condition it is wherever our vision is." Okay, so we have imagination, we have ease, and we have the unconditional that precedes everything. And so what he said in the ease is, we're not putting it in, we're taking it out, because it's already in there. And so in this realm of unconditioned causes, what we want is already in there. And that's what Abraham Hicks says. Abraham Hicks says that there's a vortex that contains everything that we ever asked for. When we appreciated something, it became part of what the universe lined up for us to have more of in our lives. And when we relax and allow this well-being that's endlessly flowing to us can get to us, because we're not resisting it by our focus on the conditions from the past, the future, or the present. So how are we going to become more unconditional becomes the question. How do we become unconditional in our loving? How do we become unconditional in our giving? How do we become unconditional in our receiving? How do we do that? It's a little bit of a mystery, but he addresses it in this chapter so powerfully, because he talks about our vision. What we're going to get is depending on where we focus our vision. And he quotes Emma Curtis Hopkins' book, High Mysticism. And Emma Curtis Hopkins was the woman they called the teacher of teachers. She taught the people who started the Unity movement. She taught Ernest Holmes. And she did not create a movement in and of herself, but she taught a whole lot of people who created other movements. And what Emma said was, where is the vision? Are you looking at a valley of dry bones, or at mountain peaks and summits of splendor and glory? Because where the vision is, there is the imagery that molds the circumstances under which we must live. Where is the vision? Are you using your imagination to see the splendor, or are you focused on the dry bones of the conditions in the moment? Are you moving back into that space that's unconditional, where we don't have to address the limitations that we already are experiencing, but where we can say, okay, there's a place where the wholeness always exists, where nothing has ever been injured or hurt or upset, where the original vision of life that we came in with still exists to be revealed. I think that's a really cool idea. And the way they said it really inspired me. Ernest said, "Now we believe that there is a vision, a mental vision, which looks away from what doesn't belong and looks at the place where everything does belong, according to where the spiritual vision is set in the realm of unconditioned causes." So we're returning to the unconditioned causes. As we think about conditional, I had this incredible experience during getting ready for this talk, because I knew I was going to put it together on Thursday rather than have the whole day Saturday to draw all of my ideas together. And I was open, and I was receptive, and the universe kept sending me things that would add to this talk. And the very first one came a little piece of paper. It was about that big. As a matter of fact, I have it here. I can show it to you. That's not the one. Where's the other one? Here it is. A one-liner from under my pile of towels says, if you need conditions to change before you can be happy, you're screwed. I thought, okay, I'm going to talk about the realm of unconditioned causes. And the very first one was the one-liner that said, if you need conditions to change before you can be happy, you're screwed. Okay, so that set me off on how do you deal with this unconditional stuff? And it's like, okay, you can't wait for the condition to change in order to be happy. You can't wait for the condition to change in order to love if somebody's being unlovable. And so I continued to look for things that would help me understand and explain this unconditional stuff. And I found this quote that seemed particularly poignant in this moment. It comes from 2004. And you'll see why it's poignant in the moment. You will leave behind all pushing against. In other words, you will love George Bush when you die. So we've been in this place before, some of us. And he will love you when he dies. And you would all do one another a favor by loving each other now, even before you die, by forcing yourself to look for positive aspects. They allow you, if you're forced to see that face on the television screen or in Facebook every day, then you darn well better find something that makes you feel good when you see it. Unconditional love says, I'm going to love because I'm a lover, not because you're lovable. So it comes back to, what is our vision of ourself? Am I a lover or am I a hater? Am I resistant or am I allowing? Who do I choose to be? And we get to choose. That is the essence of where we are. We get to choose. What am I going to choose? And so I open the drawer where I keep my socks in the summertime because I go barefoot most of the time in the summer. I keep my socks upstairs in the winter because I put socks on before I go downstairs in the wintertime. So I open my sock drawer that I hadn't opened since last fall that sits by my front door where my shoes are. And here was this quote from Ernest Holmes. So this is my sock drawer quote. The other was my towel quote. But Ernest demonstrated his vision for himself in this quote. I don't know where it came from. It was yet another random piece of paper that just happened to be in my sock drawer in the perfect timing. My love goes out to everyone in the world. I do not exclude anything, for I love all and everything that is. My love warms and lightens everything it touches, and it goes out to all places. The love flowing through me is a power to all who come in contact with it, and all feel and know that I love. Love within me is perfect and complete. Wow, what a vision he had for his life and his world and his influence. My love is a power to all who come in contact with, and all feel and know that I love. Now that's unconditional love. He was not holding anything back. He was just loving. And so if you are following your treatment with the place where your vision is, It makes you ask yourself, who am I? How do I see myself? Am I unconditional in my love, or am I restricted? Am I tied back? Am I held down? Or am I going to look higher and see the truth of who I am and who everyone else is, and trust that the realm of unconditional causes will bring out the wholeness. And I was reminded of the first chapter I talked about in January from this book that has one of the quotes that I quote the most often, although I've paraphrased it. Ernest said, "There is nothing to be disintegrated or reintegrated, but only the wholeness to be revealed that has always been there." And so this information about the realm of unconditional causes has really helped me expand my thinking about what it means to reveal the wholeness. Because in that unconditional place, nothing has ever been limited. The health is there, the prosperity is there, the beauty is there, the harmony is there, the clarity is there, the intelligence is there, the power is there. And we can reveal that into the world in spite of all the conditions that people have thought into being, because God didn't limit the world. We limited the world by our focus on the things that felt limiting. And we can only teach what we know. And the people who taught us the highest vision that they had. But most people aren't dealing with the realm of unconditional causes. They're trying to fix what's broken from the position they're in the moment. And we have to look beyond fixing what's broken, because if we're focused on what's broken, we are not focused in unconditional. And in the chapter I talked about in January, Ernest quoted Aurobindo, who said, "Transcendence doesn't reconcile, it transmutes." In other words, it doesn't fix what's broken. It looks at it from a different perspective that it seems a different shape altogether. So it simply allows the wholeness to be revealed. And Ernest said many times, "Principle is not limited by precedent. What came before does not matter in terms of what's possible now. It's always open because the principle is always infinite and unlimited." Ernest also said in the chapter I'm working on now, "Everything that is of the nature of limitation is but the limitless flowing through us at the level of our acceptance of life." So how good am I willing for it to be? You know, if we burst through the glass ceiling, how far would we be willing to go? And if we can create the vision of what that would be if there weren't the limitations, if we didn't recognize that, if we allowed ourselves to expand, to reach bigger, to be broader and stretch our imagination and allow in more spiritual territory, what could we create? And I was talking to a friend of mine about this talk this morning, and he said, "If it's all quotes, it's going to be really boring. So you got to tell a story." So I will tell you a story. Last month, I all of a sudden, while I was getting ready to go on a cruise, discovered that I needed emergency surgery, two emergency surgeries. So the first week in March, instead of going on a cruise, I went, as I said, on a cruise through the healthcare system instead of a cruise through the Caribbean. And in the moment I was presented with that, I could have been conditional and said, "Oh, everything I wanted to do on this cruise through the Caribbean is now kaput, and I'm losing all this money, and woe is me." But I didn't say that. I got admitted to the hospital at 4:30 in the morning on that Monday night. They took me to my room, and the woman said to me, she read the question at the top, "What is the most important thing to you?" And my response was, "Have fun." And she wrote in big letters on the wall in my hospital room, have fun with a big smiley face. And it set the tone. I thought, I'm not on a cruise in the Caribbean, but that doesn't mean I can't have fun. And one of the things I always tell my clients and my friends who will listen is if you make what is wrong, you break your own heart. And I decided not to break my own heart while I was in the hospital. And so I put up there, I want to have fun. And the hospital staff just cooperated up one side and down the other. They were playful. They were loving. I was alone before I left for the first surgery on Wednesday. And the nurse that had been taking care of me for a couple of days just spontaneously came over and gave me a huge hug right before I went down to surgery. And that was what I needed in that moment, and she was right there. And I got to call the hospital and tell them what a great nurse she is and tell them how fabulous the guy who picked me up to take me down to surgery both days was, because he was playful and joyful. He had braids down to his waist, and he was the liveliest person I've ever met in a hospital. And he was like a NASCAR driver with that bed going through the hallways and around the curves. And I said, I bet you guys have races in. He said, we do, but we have to go to the nurse's station because none of the hallways are long enough. I said, I bet you always win. He says, every time. And so we laughed all the way to surgery, and it was fabulous. I just had such a good time. And during that week, I thought about the question that I had wanted to ask Abraham if I was on the cruise with them for a week. And the question was, how do I access the highest vibration in the people that I meet? How can I open myself to the highest vibration? But what happened in the hospital was amazing, because on Tuesday night, I had texted my friend Doug and told him I was in the hospital, and about a month ago, I had introduced Doug to the folk club. So Doug went to the folk club. Chet wasn't there because he was in my hospital room with David watching The Voice with me. But Doug went by himself to folk club, and people said, where's Chet? Where's Connie? And he said, Connie's in the hospital. Well, somehow they announced to the entire folk club that I was in the hospital. And some of you guys know Holly and Niels. And Holly went home, and 10:30 that night, she texted 980 of my closest friends on Facebook to tell them all I was in the hospital. And I thought, I wouldn't have done that. But what Holly said was, Connie is welcoming prayers and light and Reiki and anything you want to send. She's open to receiving. And that was the most amazing thing that could have happened, because I started receiving messages. Facebook counted and told me I'd received over 600 messages in the 4 days I was in the hospital, either likes or loves or individual messages, sending prayers and Reiki and caring. And even though I didn't want visitors, I was feeling not enough energy to deal with other people's conversation and stuff, I had Facebook, and I could look on and I could see six more people had sent me love at 3 o'clock in the morning. And it was magical. And I felt totally surrounded by my spiritual community and my dear friends. And David and Chet came over 2 days, and my friend Catherine came over the other 2 days I was there. And she was my guard dog. She was barking at everyone saying, no, you can't come in. But she was there if I needed to get up and go to the bathroom or be released from my leg manacles that were compressing my legs to make sure I didn't get any blood clots, they do that automatically now. If you're bed bound for a while, it was fabulous. I would like one of those machines. It was the most meditative tool I'd ever had, with the compression and the relaxation, and then the compression and the relaxation. It was fabulous. I looked to buy them, but they're too expensive. So I was having this amazing experience with all this love and all this caring coming from the hospital staff, coming from Facebook, coming from my physical friends who were there, the friends who dropped off balloons and flowers at the hospital, didn't even come into the room, but just made sure that I knew that they were sending love. And I've been a science of mind practitioner for 23 years, and I've been praying for other people for 23 years. And I felt like all the prayers I'd ever sent out were coming back to me. It was such a loving, full circle experience that during that week when I was in the hospital, I think I felt more loved than I've ever felt in my whole life. And that's better than any cruise could have been. I've been to the Caribbean many times, but I haven't felt more love than ever in my life on a cruise before. I felt it while I was in the hospital, having two surgeries, and it was all wonderful. And it was unconditional. I was so unconditional during that time because I didn't have resistance about the cruise. I didn't have resistance about being in the hospital. I said, this is what is, and what is good. I don't know exactly why, but I trust that there's something here for me that I'm going to benefit from. And I saw it revealed again and again and again. So I allowed myself to relax. And then I came to the last quote that I found in order to give this talk. And again, it was an Abraham quote. This one was amidst a pile of magazines I was going through. And here was this piece of paper. I just have paper all over my house, but this piece of paper jumped out from among the magazines, and this is what it said. This is Abraham from February 5th, 2011. They said, "The true power of your experience lies in the silence between the words and the vibrational rhythm between the thoughts and the ease between the effort and the peace between the trying. The true power is in the allowing of the universe to yield to you what you've already queued up for it to reveal. So think as long as it's fun, try as long as it's easy, and speak as long as it feels good, and otherwise take a nap." So that's my message. Otherwise, take a nap. Enjoy your life. It's all good. Whatever it is, in some way, whether you see it yet or not, it's all good. And I just have to share with you this picture from my retreat this week. This was the mini horse that I got to play with yesterday. Just this incredible mini horse. And we got to go into the pasture and do a mindfulness meditation and interact with the horses. There were 8 horses, and 4 of them were behind bars. 4 of them were loose in the field where we were walking. But we could go up to the bars of the fences where the mini horses and the pony were. And this Jack the Rocker was leaning out between his bars, and I went over and I crouched down so that I was eye level with him. And I put out my hand. They said, "Put your fingers together real tight because otherwise your fingers look like carrots." "Put your fingers together real tight." And Jack put his muzzle right in my hand and let me pet his face. And he was only that high, you know, this beautiful little critter. He was wonderful. And then later, one called Uncanny, that they call the Zen Mother, came while I was standing in the field, and she came right up to me, and she put her head on this side of my face. And then she put her head all the way around and put her head up against my shoulder. And she did it 3 or 4 times. She just came back and spent all this wonderful time just loving my face. And that was such an amazing, heart-opening experience, to just be present with the horses who were so loving. They're therapy horses. They're not ridden. They're rescue horses that do therapy with people. And they were so unconditional. They just opened to receive what you had to give, and they just gave what they had to give. And it was magnificent. And so I experienced the realm of unconditioned causes with the horses yesterday in my retreat. And life is awesome. And I'm so grateful to be here today with all of you. So thank you.
Thank you.